Back in 1973, Judy Scott was intent on travelling to Istanbul, but she happened upon the Greek island of Hydra, and the people that she would... she met a lot of very interesting people, and the island and the people brought her back on a number of occasions, and all of the experience enhanced and influenced her life forevermore. And she joins me on the line now via Zoom because Judy has written a book which is titled Leonard, Marianne and Me. So, Judy, good evening and welcome. Thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you very much, and good morning to you from Los Angeles.
Ah, the beautiful city of Los Angeles. Is it as beautiful as ever?
It's quite beautiful, and also right now very, very warm.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of warmth around. What temperatures are you looking at in the highs at the minute?
Well, I live close to the seashore, which tends to make it a little bit cooler. But it's about 83 right now, and it's only 8:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
83 Fahrenheit, of course.
Of course, absolutely. That equates to quite high temperatures in the other one as well. I can't do the math right now. I just can't. Judy, 1973, why did you want to go to Istanbul?
I was just doing a lot of traveling, hitting as many of the, you know, well-known spots. I wanted to see Hagia Sophia. I wanted to see the Bosphorus. I'd done Europe already once. I was on my second tour. And in 73, it was kind of well-known that if you were a single young woman, it wasn't all that good an idea to travel to Istanbul by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I hooked up with a bunch of people that I met at a youth hostel in Corfu Island in Greece, and they all were keen to go as well. So we set off together. And then I got waylaid. We were in Athens and on our way to Istanbul, and they said, listen, we'd like to see one more Greek island before we move on to Turkey. And I said, okay, but let's try and find a close one because I'm not up for another overnight ferry ride. And we went off to the Greek travel office and they said, here is the island for you. It's only 3 hours by boat and it's very, very beautiful. And there's no cars. So it's unique in Greece because there's no automated transportation at all. All of the roads on this island are built into hills, quite steep hills. So they all have steps in them and that eliminates the possibility of any wheeled transport. So we went off the next day to Idra, and the rest was history. It is Idra if you live there. It's Hydra if you're a tourist.
Okay, I gotcha. Obviously, I've never been there because I pronounced it Hydra, but Idra. Okay, when you got there, Judy, what did you see when you landed? What was the picture? Paint a picture for us.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it is one of the most scenic islands in Greece. It's a harbor which has three hills surrounding it, one behind it, one on the left, and one on the right. It's a deep water yacht harbor, and all of the architecture is protected. All of it, you can't have a fence, for instance, on Idra. You must build a wall. You must whitewash your house once a year. All the houses are white except for a few that are natural stone. And it's just it's just a very dramatic entry because you just round a curve in the island, which is, it looks like a huge loaf of petrified bread, and then there you are, right in the middle of the port. It's a very dramatic entry.
Okay, and all of the houses or the estates or the whatever they are they all in one area or spread across the island?
No, there's only two, two and a half inhabited parts. There's the main town of Idra, and then just to the west of that is a smaller town called Kamini, and just to the west of that is a village called Vicho. And the rest of the entire island is completely uninhabited. It's 11 miles long and 3 miles wide. So it's not a very big place.
Not at all. All right. So you landed there. And what happened? It must have happened very quickly that you fell in love with the place and didn't budge. for a while.
Yeah. I was just incredibly lucky. In fact, when we landed, and it was in early May, so it's before the real high season started, my friend said, let's book four nights. And I said, you know what? Let's just book three nights. This is a little pension on the port, because it's pretty empty now. And if we want to stay the fourth night, I don't think that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. So you see, I was still really keen to leave and go to Istanbul. Right. And the second day I was swimming on the rocks with my friends, and I left to go to a little taverna, a quayside taverna. And I encountered a table of who I thought were tourists sitting there having lunch, a huge platter of baked fish. Right. But it turned out one of the people at that table was a Greek, a very wealthy Greek man who owned a mansion on the island. And they invited me to join them for lunch. I was 27, really tanned, Irish pug nose and curly hair. So I probably looked as good as I ever looked in my life.
Right.
And I joined them, and, you know, they shared their lunch with me. And then they invited me to go up to this gentleman's house. His name was George Lialios. And I dedicated the book to him because I went up to his house. And while sitting in the living room, there was a knock on the door, and this lovely Norwegian woman, very beautiful and statuesque, came in. And we started chatting, and she told me her name was, again, when you know her, her name was Mariana, the Norwegian pronunciation. Everyone called her that. Leonard called her that. No one ever called her anything else. Even though the song is so long, Marianne, he just made that accessible, but it wouldn't have made sense to call it So Long Mariana. Mm-hmm. But we started talking, and she told me that she'd lived there for 11 years on and off with this folk singer. Maybe I'd heard of him. His name was Leonard Cohen. I was like, oh my God. I mean, he is a god to me. He's one of my all-time favorites. I had every one of his albums, knew every one of his songs by heart. And so suddenly the island got a lot more interesting to me.
Okay.
And when she walked me to the door, she was leaving. She said, come and visit me. And I said, well, you know, I think I'm leaving tomorrow. And she said, she just looked me up and down, kind of did an evaluation, and said, don't leave. This is a very special place, and you belong here.
Wow.
Yeah. And at the same time, George said, well, I have some extra rooms in my house. If you'd like to come and stay, and you'll help me do some, he was doing some painting interior, then you can stay here. And that was an offer just too good to refuse.
Wow, that is incredible. No, Leonard wasn't there at the time, right. But I don't think you were there too long before he arrived.
That's right. I was there about 3 weeks. We had a big birthday party for Mariana. We became very close. Then my money was running out again, and I was like, I think I might have to leave. And word came through Athens that Leonard was on his way.
Okay.
And Mariana said, well, now you can't leave. And I thought, well, nothing would ever take me away now. So, yeah, he came, and I got very close to him as well. We hung out together. We sang together. He treated me incredibly kindly and paid a lot of attention to me and seemed even interested in, you know, my thoughts on things. And it just was a really special time.
Okay. Have you something in the background going on?
I'm sorry, my dog.
Yeah.
that's my Westie.
He sounds like he's not a little Shih Tzu or something. He sounds a little bit bigger than that. A Westie, lovely, lovely.
Yeah.
All right, okay. All right, so by the time that Leonard arrived on the island, you and Marianne had become quite good friends.
Yes.
And I think somewhere, I read somewhere that you said that they basically invited you into their family.
Yes, in fact, at one point, only a couple of weeks after Leonard had got there, Mariana and I were walking by the port, and she did something that I was distracting. And I said, why do you do that? And she said, well, it really scares me, because if we had met in another city and, you know, became friends or lovers or whatever, it would have been one thing. But now it's like you're a part of the family. You fit in with Leonard. You fit in with Axel, who was her son, who was 13 at the time. And you fit in with me. It's just really kind of intimidating. And I said, I feel just the same way. It scares me too.
Wow. That must have felt very special.
Yes, it did.
Mm. your first time there, your first visit, that was your first occasion. Did you leave then at some point?
I left, and Leonard was still there. He was so kind. He was like, Judy, if you need money to stay, I have money. I can give you money. Mm-hmm. And I said, I can't take your money, Leonard. Thank you. He also, because I used to sing with him sometimes, said, you sing as good as any backup singer I've ever worked with. I can send you to Clive Davis if you like. Now, Clive Davis was then the president of Columbia Records. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be a singer, but I was, again, intimidated by that. Singing with Leonard in his studio was really easy, but auditioning for Clive Davis was just, I think, more than my tiny talent and tiny brain could absorb. So okay. I said, I think I have to make it on my own, but thank you, Leonard. And off I went back to Paris, where I had been staying with friends. And that's where I met, just by happenstance, Idrit kind of reaches out to you in all kinds of mysterious and mystical and ways. And I was at a taverna or a bistro, sorry, in Paris. And we had some flyers from the Greek Travel Office. My friend was going to Greece with his family. And one of the gentlemen at the table with us said, oh, do you go to Greece? You like Greece? I said, yeah, I just came from there. And he said, where do you stay in Greece? I said, one of the islands. He said, which one? I said, Idra. And he said, I know Idra. Do you know Mariana? And I went, oh, my God. I had just left her. Yeah. And it turns out that he was Jean-Marc, our pair, was a longtime lover of hers. In about 7-8 years, they were involved. Whenever Leonard was away, Jean-Marc was there. And
I read as well that you said that everybody sleeps with everybody in Idra. So did you have an intimate relationship with both Marianne and with Leonard?
I've pretty much avoided any details about that. My relationship with Mariana was really more emotional than anything else.
Okay.
I mean, we did spend some nights together, but that really wasn't the focus.
Of course.
And with Leonard, no. I mean, Leonard was just like a very close friend. And that's pretty much all I would say.
That's all right. Tell us about Leonard. What did he like? When he was on his holidays in Idra, did you watch him write songs? Did you watch him write poetry? Was he one for long walks? Did he like iced tea? What was he like?
Well, one of the things that everyone loved on Idra was swimming, and he loved to go swimming too. I mean, the water there is beautiful, and there was one special area of rocks we called Montreal Beach, because an awful lot of the people who knew Leonard or knew of Leonard from Montreal came and stayed on the island. But he was very much a homebody. He didn't really socialize much. He loved Idra because it was the ideal place for him to work. And he worked every single morning for at least 4 or 5 hours. One morning, I was in the kitchen with Mariana, and he came out with his little notebook. And he said, wait until I tell you this. I've just discovered this incredible phrase. And we went, okay. And he said, the woman being born. And I looked at Mariana, and she looked at me, because sometimes he liked to joke around. And we were like, ah, the woman being born. Wow, that's amazing. He actually was so tickled. He got up on the dining room table, the kitchen table, on his hands and elbows, and had the book in front of him, and just kept shaking his head saying, the woman being born. Isn't that amazing? Wow. I said in my book, I didn't get it. I wasn't sure he was serious, but he was. He actually used it at some later point in some of his writings.
We say that we shouldn't meet our heroes. You were a big fan of Leonard's before you met himself and Marianne. Was there any disappointing features at all?
No, absolutely not. I mean, he was more spectacular and more available, and I just couldn't believe that he kind of accepted me as an equal and as a friend. I mean, he was this huge figure, and I was just this little hippie girl, you know, traveling around. Yeah. It really gave me something I hadn't had before, which was a sense of self-confidence, I think, and just a more self-respect, I guess you could say.
All right. And obviously, you were a student, you were a young girl. You would have taken away huge learnings from that, I presume, from your exchanges and your time together.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it really was a seminal event in my life, right. And it influenced me right straight to this day. And look, it gave me a book.
I was just about to ask you about the book. Why did you write it?
It started out, I'd always kept journals, and I actually was on IDRA with intentions to write something. I've written a couple of screenplays and a bunch of poetry, nothing that ever got published. And one of the things that Leonard said to me in front of Mariana was, you're very welcome in our house, but just promise me one thing, don't write about us. And I said, okay, I won't. And I didn't for years and, you know, years and years. And then another gentleman who was a writer and hung out on IDRA, a man named Kevin McGrath, he teaches at Harvard, was putting together a compilation of a bunch of recollections and memoirs and you know, just different things from IDRA expats. And they approached me. They knew I had something and said, will you join us? And I said, well, let me think about it. And I sent it to Leonard. We stayed in touch all through the years, not real close touch, but I had his email address and his phone number. And I sent him what was about 100 pages of what is now my book, is 260. And I said, you were so kind to me. And I've been approached to publish some of this, but first I would seek your blessing because I promised you I wouldn't write about you. And now I have. And he wrote me back the very next day, and it was just amazing. He said, dear Judy, thank you for sharing this very fine piece of work for which I have no objections whatsoever. And he went on to say it was really touching to read about some of our close friends from that time, and I deeply admire the honesty and the detail of the piece.
Mm.
So I said, wow, I may actually have something here. And for the next 3 years, I worked on it and got a literary agent who, you know, submitted it to a number of publishers. And we were lucky enough to get one.
Lovely. What about Marianne then? How friendly did you remain? Was it similar to Leonard? Was it the occasional text, emails, that kind of thing?
Well, I stayed closer with her for a longer period of time. In 1975, I went back to IDRA, rented a house, and stayed there for 6 months. And when I left, I traveled to Oslo, which is where Mariana was, at her invitation. And I stayed with her for 10 days in Oslo with her and Axel. She was single at the time. And I was pregnant at the time. And she said, why don't you stay here and have the baby? And I was like, no, I think I'm going to go home to New Jersey. And I did. And we had, I'm very fortunate because we kept a written correspondence. That was before emails. And her estate gave me back all of the letters that I had written to her. Mariana kept everything. And then they gave me written permission to publish the letters that she had written to me. Okay. So that's all. That correspondence is all in the book.
Good.
And around 84, she got married again, and we did lose touch for probably 8-10 years. And then through emails and, you know, mutual friends, I was always going back to IDRA and just missing her. They'd say, oh, Judy, Mariana was just here 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And but we finally hooked up. We met again in 2011.
Oh, nice.
In 94, we started emailing one another again. I helped her set up a Facebook page because she didn't know how. And then she said, sent me an email like, do I have to friend all these people? I don't know all of these people. I was like, no. Facebook just sends you suggestions. You don't have to friend them. She's like, oh, good, because I couldn't handle that. But in 2011, we actually finally met up again on IDRA, and that was really wonderful.
Lovely. Who is the book for? Is it for fans of Leonard Cohen? Is it for people that are just interested and curious, or is there somebody else?
I think that it's for people who love to travel, and one of the things my agent encouraged me to do is more about the island, Judy, more about, you know, make it more of a travelogue. So we did insert quite a lot of stuff about the island and Greece, the culture and just the scenery. And it's probably also for people who are discovering their sexuality as I did, and discovering that it was okay to be gay, which in 1973 was not all that acceptable. It was a gradual process for me, but it's one that, I mean, I've been with my partner now, who we're legally married for 38 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And yeah, so, and I, and she's gone back to Idra with me many, many times as well.
Great.
So yeah, I think it does have interest to the lesbian community, to the travel community, but certainly mainly to anyone who's interested in Leonard Cohen. I had an encounter, we did a reading actually at a local bookstore with a man named Paul Zollo, who is the executive editor at American Songwriter magazine. And he has interviewed everybody. I mean, he's interviewed Bob Dylan. He's interviewed Paul Simon. He's interviewed Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, Carole King, Burt Bacharach, everyone who's known in songwriting, Paul has known and interviewed. And so I was absolutely blessed that he participated in this reading that we had at our local bookstore, which is called The Village Well in Culver City. And he interviewed me, and we've become really good friends. And he said, "Judy, I love your book. You have honored Leonard Cohen."
Good. Lovely.
So that was nice.
Judy, I'm running out of time. I have 10 minutes to go. I have business news to do. I want to take a track from Leonard as well, and I have a commercial break to do before I finish at 6 o'clock. But you had a throwaway comment there fairly close to the start of the interview that I want to come back to, and that was something to do with Irish. Is there Irish blood in you?
Three quarters.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent. Tell me who.
Well, my maternal grandmother, her maiden name was Manley, and her family was from Cork.
Lovely.
She was born in Newark, New Jersey. I was born also in New Jersey, in Kearney, New Jersey, which at that time was three quarters Scotch-Irish.
Lovely.
I have one Scottish ancestor. My grandfather was born in Edinburgh. But all of my other ancestors were Irish. From Ireland.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right.
And I've been there twice.
Oh, good. Excellent. And, and it's still intact.
You probably can't tell, but I did kiss the Blarney Stone.
I'd say you swallowed half of it. That's where it went. Judy Scott, it's been lovely talking to you. Your book is called Leonard, Marianne and Me, Magical Summers on Idra. Now I know how to pronounce it correctly.
Yes.
It sounds absolutely idyllic, and I'm looking forward to getting stuck into the pages of it. Thanks for taking time to talk to us. I know the book is available on our bookstore, which is at tre.radio. So Judy, I wish you well, and thanks again for the contribution. And I hope that we might have a chat again at some other stage.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks, Judy. It's sure. Bye-bye.